Greetings, ghouls and fools. I am your horrible host, the Clip Keeper, curator of the Non-Pro Vault, a dark and disused dungeon of delicious delights. The Non-Pro Vault holds in-depth interviews, irrevenant reviews, and all-encompassing convention coverage. It's a horror thing, you understand. Anyways, Non-Productive was unfortunate enough to attend another cataclysmic event, Saturday Nightmares, a horror convention like no other. Now, listen in with terror as your hosts, Frank and Ken, along with special guests, the Final Girl Support Group, interview the guests attending the show. First up, listen in as Frank grills actor Julian Sands of what it means to be in a horror film.
Who are we here with?
Julian Sands.
And where might we know you from?
Well, it depends how late you stay up and how often you blink. But I've done a few films within this genre: Warlock, Phantom of the Opera, Arachnophobia.
Boxing Helena,
for sure. I would. I mean, Boxing Helena was a sort of, it was. I think of it as a psychological love story, not really a genre film, but it's sort of considered a genre film. Phantom of the Opera with Dario Argento, and a wonderful film called Tale of a Vampire for a Japanese director. And I've always enjoyed this genre. I always enjoyed the films of Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, Hammer horror films when I was growing up.
Did you have a particular favorite artist when you were growing up?
I think I had a great enthusiasm for the genre. And as I said, I liked Christopher Lee and Alfred Hitchcock and Peter Cushing and Dennis Wheatley, Vincent Price. I suppose, Vincent Price would have been my icon. I would love to have worked with them. Yes, I would. But I didn't. And I didn't meet him. But he had a great spirit and great intelligence. I like that.
What do you think about conventions like this?
Well, they're fun. I mean, I think they are a little bit isolated up here in the broom cupboard. I like to be on the dance floor where you meet people and see people and there's a good buzz.
Is there any site we could visit to find out more about your work?
I just finished work on David Fincher's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which comes out in December. I'm doing a pilot for HBO at the moment. I'm doing a lot of theatre stuff, and things are good, happily.
Very nice. Thank you very much for taking some time out to talk with us.
Sure.
Frank and the Final Girls hunt down star of Phantasm and friend of the network, A. Michael Baldwin, and talk with him about how to best deal with children.
Michael, day two of Saturday Nightmares. How are things?
Things are fine, thank you.
All right.
All is well.
You know, I've been meaning to ask. I know your daughter's
here.
I have.
Tell me all about it.
Your daughter's here today, right?
That's true.
Now, what does she think about the movies you've been in?
I don't think that she thinks anything because she hasn't seen any of them.
Would you not allow her to see them, or would she just absolutely refuse?
Well, she's only 10 years old, so what do you think?
I think she refuses.
I'm not letting my 10-year-old see one of these movies, and they're pretty tame compared to, like, Slasher.
Yeah.
They're pretty tame, but no.
But you're in these films right about that age.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So it's a little, do what I say, not what I do.
There are many duplicitous aspects of life. This is one of them.
Very well.
Excellent.
What was it like to enter the series as a child actor and then return years later as an adult?
Very different. Two very different experiences.
Yeah.
So even though at the time we made Phantasm, I had already been a professional actor for quite a long time, and I had even starred in a feature before Phantasm, but, making a movie when you're a kid is a lot of fun. And, there's a considerable amount of power that one has, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And if you're 13 and you have that kind of power, it's possible to abuse it.
And you did?
I'm not saying necessarily that was me, but, draw your own conclusions.
That was him, totally him.
So obviously, once you're an adult and you've been in the business for 25 years, that you still have, when you're starring in the movie, there still is a certain controlling element that's there. But now it's used in a much different way. And so, there's a difference between being a 13-year-old professional and being an adult professional. That's
right.
Two different things. Both are professional. Both are working professional. Make no mistake about that. But, you know, there's a big difference.
When we get a chance, we're going to come by and ask your daughter herself and see if she's interested in seeing your film and if she's ever tried to sneak a peek.
I'm sure Audrey would appreciate that.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
I see our special guest is here.
Oh.
Can we ask you a few very serious questions?
Okay.
Here, stand here, honey. Audrey, this is Frank. Frank, this is Audrey.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Now, again. Now, your father's not paying attention. Have you ever seen any of his movies, the Phantasm movies?
No.
No? All right, he's honestly not paying attention now. Have you seen any of them? Like, not even a minute of it?
No.
All right. Are you interested in seeing it?
I guess. I don't know.
You gave a very political answer.
Thank you.
That was very good. Have you ever thought of a career in politics?
No.
No. All right. Okay, well, thank you very much. It's clear that's all we're going to get from you today. Thank you for your time. I know you've been very, very busy. Where can we find out more about your work?
I don't know.
Well, we'll make a website for you off of yours. That would be nice. All right, thank you very much, man.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, too.
Thank you.
I hope that came out well. Do you want to see the film? Maybe. That was very good.
The return of the Living Dead cast and crew were among the honored guests at this year's Saturday Nightmares. But little did they know the real nightmare wouldn't begin until the non-bro crew came along looking to score some interviews.
All right, I am looking over an awesome table here, Frank. Some images that are very well known to me, some new ones that I still haven't seen yet. And behind this table is the incredible artist. Who do we have with us today?
I'm William Stout from Pasadena, California.
Now, I love the work. I've been following a lot of your work for years, but one of the main focal points for you being here this weekend is also because you are affiliated with the Return of the Living Dead.
That's right. I was the production designer for the film, designed all the creatures, the zombies, the sets.
That explains it. I'm so sorry, but I was like, why? There was a thing about that movie that I'm rambling, aren't I, Ken?
You just forgot there were zombies in a Living Dead movie.
No, I just, like, there was always something about the art of that film. It just impressed me. And I'm like, where have I seen this before? And now I know. Well, thank you, Saturday Nightmares.
Yeah, actually, one of the reasons I got chosen by Dan O'Bannon to production design the film is because he didn't want a traditional production designer. He wanted someone with a comic book background. And Dan and I were both big fans of the old EC comics, like Tales from the Crypt, and I tried to bring that sensibility, the visual sensibility, to the film.
Now, I do have to ask you, because the images in Return of the Living Dead at this point are really iconic. I mean, you're a zombie that comes out of the trioxin canister.
Oh, the tar man.
Yes. Is still one of the most haunting visages I've ever seen on film. As well as the... disentorsoed half corpse.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of work actually went into making both of those prosthetics and get-ups from start to finish?
Well, the difficult problem with the tar man is I had to convey that there was a skeleton covered with this dripping goo, and yet there had to be a human inside that suit. So as soon as you put a human in a suit, it bulks it up, and you don't want it to look bulky. You want it to look skeletal. So we hired Alan Troutman, who's very, very thin, and then I designed the suit in such a way so that I have the bones coming to the surface on the suit to give the illusion that it's a skeletal figure.
Because, I mean, even after all this time, I mean, it still works, it's still impressive, and there's still no flaws to it whatsoever.
Oh, thanks
well,
so much.
But I'm sure as the artist, I know talking to artists, they talk about all the flaws in it, but I mean, on film, it's perfect.
Well, I tell you, I can't take full credit. Half of the credit at least goes to Alan Troutman. Whenever I design a creature suit, I always insist that they do not use a stuntman, that they use an actor, because Alan brought that suit to life. He was able to move in a way that it looked like his bones weren't connected. And so, really, Alan gets at least half the credit for that great tar man.
Very cool. Now, my other question was going back to the film. How did you guys do the half corpse?
Oh, the half corpse. That was great. It was
a puppet, right?
It was a puppet that was built by Tony Gardner. I think this might have been Tony's first film. He looked like he was about 12 years old. I borrowed him from Rick Baker. Rick was a good friend of mine back then, and Tony really rose to the occasion. He created the split dog for us, and he created that gorgeous half corpse. Now, I'm a hands-on production designer, so I was under the table during that scene, and I was operating the spine, making the spine flop around and making it ooze spinal fluid. And then Tony was also puppeteering, and then Brian Peck, who played Scuzz, he was also puppeteering the head of the half-corpse, and he was doing her voice, although his voice got replaced later by a female voice. But he was making that thing come to life. And so there were the three of us under that gurney working with that puppet.
At any point, did you feel like Jim Henson at all?
A demented Jim Henson, yeah. With your hand in Kermit's corpse?
Yeah. Well, actually, I was friends with Jim Henson. Jim, he purchased a screenplay of mine and was the reason I was able to get into the Writers Guild. He was a super guy, super nice guy.
Very cool. Now, William, what else are you working on? And you have a lot of your artwork here with us today. Are there any projects that you're working on?
Sure. Right now, I'm painting two big murals for the San Diego Zoo for their new elephant compound. One painting will show San Diego 20,000 years ago, back when we had elephants. We had mammoths and mastodons and saber-tooths, and it will show about 30 other animals that associated with those creatures. And then the second mural will be the exact same scene, but today with the seven remaining animals.
Very cool.
So I'm doing that. I'm doing an 8-page story for Alien Worlds Comics, which is being published by Raw Studios. That's Thomas Jane, the actor from Hung,
yep.
And Tim Bradstreet. Yep. Bruce Jones wrote the story. And let's see, what else? I'm up to production design a Ray Bradbury film called Leviathan. It's basically Moby Dick in space.
Nice.
And so I'm really excited about that. We have a terrific screenplay by Mark Zucre, and I think it's going to be a fantastic film.
Well, you're going to have to keep us posted on everything. We're going to have you on the air when I do a call and let us know about everything going on with all of your projects.
Oh, I'd love it.
How can our audience find out more about what's going on with you, William?
Oh, just go to my website, williamstout.com. That's really easy, and I keep a journal. I post news and talk about the stuff I'm going. It has my appearances where I'll be around the country, and that's a good way to keep track of what I'm doing.
Very cool. I wanted to make sure to tell you that you enjoy the rest of the weekend. I hope everything's going well for you. And it was definitely a pleasure and an honor to meet you.
Oh, thanks. Well, Saturday Nightmares is a great show. The people who run it are just fantastic.
Great, and have a great weekend.
All right, thanks.
Quick question.
Yeah, sure.
Can you tell us a little bit about the script that Jim Henson bought? Did it ever get produced?
Yes. Here's the story of that. It was his daughter Lisa was an executive at Warner Brothers, and she wanted to do a film about the war between Cope and Marsh, two of the earliest American paleontologists, and she wanted to do it as a miniseries. And she was talking to her dad about it, and Jim was looking for a project to follow. He had done Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, what he considers more realistic Muppet films. And so he was looking for a third project to do. And he said, why don't I do a dinosaur film? And then we can use that technology and then apply that to your film when you do the Cope and Marsh film. And so they thought that was a good idea. So they went to, they went to the Bahamas, and they were just pouring through stacks and stacks of dinosaur books trying to get an idea for this dinosaur movie. And their cook came to see them at the beach and put their food down. And she looked at what they're doing. She goes, huh, you think those are dinosaur books? Those aren't dinosaur books. I'll show you a dinosaur book. And she went back to the house, and she brought back my book. The Dinosaur is a Fantastic New View of a Lost Era. And showed it to them. And they looked through the book, and they just loved the book. And then when they got to my biography page, they saw that I had already worked in film. So they thought, oh, this is too perfect. So Lisa promised her dad, Jim, that when she got back to Los Angeles, she'd contact me and see if I was interested in doing this film. So I had a couple meetings with Jim and Lisa, and it was a little frustrating for me because the only result at the end of each meeting was, gee, it'd be great to do a dinosaur film with Muppets. And so for the third meeting, I came prepared, and I had written a screenplay. And I presented the screenplay to them. They read it. They loved it. They showed it to Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers gave them $25 million to make the film, which at that time was a lot of dough, and including an extra $5 million just to do research and development on Muppet dinosaurs. And so I began designing the film, and I worked on it for about 9 months, and then the Hensons found out that Lucas and Spielberg were doing Land Before Time, which was very similar to the film that we were doing. And they lied. They told Henson that their film was going to be done a year ahead of ours. And so Jim didn't want to look like he was copying Lucas and Spielberg, so he dropped the project. Wow. So,
ironically, I
worked on the advertising for Land Before Time, which was frustrating, as you can imagine. But then I was years later, I was working at Walt Disney Imagineering, designing their theme parks, and Jim Henson was walking down the hall. He saw me in a meeting, and he pulled me out of the meeting and says, "Bill, I got great news. Our dinosaur project is back on. We're going to make our movie together." And then he died 3 days later.
Oh, man.
We would have had a William Stout conceived, Jim Henson produced dinosaur movie.
That would have been awesome. That would have been so awesome.
Yeah. Brian Henson, if you're listening to this, please resurrect.
I'd still love to make that movie.
That'd be great.
All right, we have another familiar voice to our network in front of us at the moment. We have the incredible, beautiful Beverly Randolph with us today.
Yay! No. Hi, you guys. It's nice to be back with you again.
Good. I'm actually glad that we have you right now, because I heard from a little birdie you don't like doing interviews.
It depends on the interview. If it's a good interview, it's a lot of fun. And if it's a bad interview, it's terrible.
Well, let's apologize in advance and just leave
now. Well, I'm just kind of curious, after she came on the show, why she's talking to us right now then.
Then it must have been a great interview.
I'll take that $20. Thank you. Beverly, how are you enjoying the show so far?
We are having the best time. It's great. As you can hear, it's very crowded in here. And we're having a wonderful time. And as always, we have the very best fans in the whole world.
Now, you have a lot of cool memorabilia from the Return of the Living Dead with us. I mean, some of the shirts are classic. I've never seen a Return of the Living Dead mouse pad before.
Do you love that? That's my last one. I have one left.
How cool is that?
It's awesome. It's amazingly cool. And how about the coffee cups?
Wow.
Come on.
With the photos all over?
Two scenes, yes.
Very nice.
When I'm hard at work, I like to relax by looking at scenes of Return of the Living Dead.
I just like having zombies all over my desk at work. So.
Well, yeah, and you know what? Look, you can roll your mouse pad all over us.
Nice.
How fun is that? Come on.
Really,
that is, you have just helped bring my dreams, you know,
to
confirm.
Yeah, I know. And we're also selling personal items like our SAG cards, which are a little more expensive, but they're very personal. We carry them in our wallets, and we have them in our homes. And you know what? You just never know.
You're selling SAG cards.
Our SAG cards. Our personal SAG cards.
So
yeah.
I can just go out to California and
get
just
a job.
Exactly.
Well,
nice.
Our names are off.
Hey, you know what?
I can ask for a Beverly.
You sign the back of it, and then you get to keep that.
You know, Beverly, a little plastic surgery, a little sexual orientation surgery.
Is it time for me to have plastic surgery?
No, I'm talking about me. If I stole one of those and
he's been looking for an excuse for a breast implant for years. He's just playing with his pair at home. Just like meditation balls. It's really embarrassing.
You guys. But we also have great pictures, and I have two t-shirts left.
Very nice also.
Be gone soon.
Well, it's only the first day. How do you plan on keeping all this for the rest of the weekend?
I don't want to carry any of it home. So.
Smart girl.
So come on over. Come see us.
And my other question is, from here, where do you want to go?
We've got a couple of things going on. Bill Stout and Don Kalf and I did a movie short, which I think we talked about. I'm not sure.
Briefly, yes.
On the radio. And then we also have a few things that we're not allowed to talk about that are very exciting. The Return of the Dead fans are going to be so excited.
I am so glad you brought that up, because I have to make sure that you get a copy of the episode that you did, because when you thought that you were almost getting ready to spill the beans, there were ghosts in the system that actually started cutting that line. And that's when all those weird sound effects started happening.
My
when
dog.
You were calling.
My dog barked?
No, I mean, that was when we had, like, the phone sound effects going off and all the weird noises. And we have no idea how or why it happened. And we equated it to... It had to be because you almost opened your mouth.
I was getting reprimanded. Is that what it was?
I think the spirits in the another world heard you and wanted to make sure that you were keeping to you're a part of the bargain there.
I see my manager, PR gentleman, standing behind me.
He's staring daggers. I know Mr. Perez here, and when daggers are getting stared at me, I know that our interview's almost over because
it's hurting, isn't it?
Oh, it stings. It stings, and somehow it twists. I don't know how he does it.
I'm feeling it too.
But Beverly, I do want to thank you for your time and for hanging out with us again. And I want you to enjoy the rest of the weekend. And we are going to have that drinking game at some point over the weekend.
Hey, I'm waiting for you.
Okay, like I said, I was telling Brian Peck, we packed a little Monopoly thimble for you.
You know, you could do drinking games with milk. It makes you just as sick. Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good.
But Beverly, listen, I want to thank you again. It was a pleasure to actually see you face to face. And don't be a stranger, okay?
Well, thank you so much. You guys are wonderful, and this was a great interview.
Thank you, and have a great weekend.
Frank, we are here at Saturday Nightmares.
Yeah, I know. I've been here for like an hour. Where have you been?
We can't get into that. It's a lot of incriminating evidence, a lot of stories I have to talk about and explain.
Crying deeply into your clothing. Got it.
And my beer.
Yeah.
But one of the cool things is we have, I don't want to see a familiar face, but a familiar voice.
That's
From a prior show. Who do we have with us here today at Saturday Nightmares?
Well, that familiar voice belongs to Brian Peck, also known as Scud. From Return of the Living Dead. I figure I'm on the radio. I want to talk that way.
Hey, no. Hey, if you want to do the whole interview like this, go ahead. Feel free.
Okay, great. Go ahead and ask away with some questions.
And let's
see. Yes, we'll receive lovely party gifts.
I think it might be a great contest to see how long he can actually keep it up.
Wow. Don't challenge me. I love hearing the sound of my own voice. It's really sick.
Well, you've been on the show, so I can personally vouch for that.
Yes, it's true. I have been on the show, and it is interesting to see you in person. And to the listeners out there.
Interesting good or interesting, oh my God, I'm running for the hills.
I want to say to the listeners out there, they're far less attractive in person.
Well, we have preached that all the time.
Yeah.
So, Brian, how are you enjoying Jersey and Saturday Nightmares so far?
Oh, it's awesome. It's great. The convention has really just begun, so we're only a couple hours into it, but having a great time. My first convention in New Jersey.
Nice.
So far, so good. And got to, catch a great dinner with my dear, dear friend who lives in Manhattan last night, so I like it here.
Like I say, from the well-mannered coif and the shirt, you fit in perfectly, I gotta tell you.
Oh, thanks, you know, I tried. I mean, I'm going to Jersey, you know, it's like, I shaved my chest, I worked out, and I put a lot of goo in my hair. It's
nice.
Terrible. You know what's terrible? Is that
accent is?
That, number one. No, but B, the fact that I think the Jersey Shore has sadly poisoned everyone into thinking that that's the entire state of New Jersey.
Yes.
And what's ironic is that it is called the Garden State for a reason. New Jersey has some really beautiful parts to it.
Yeah.
But, everyone just thinks it's snooky.
What's the thing? You know, the way the media plays it, people think Jersey, and we went from Tony Soprano to Snooki.
Right, right. Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know if that's a move up or a move down. It's a lateral move.
Now, I heard that you guys are having a VIP session tonight. Where people
I don't know if I'd call it a VIP session. Maybe on Craigslist that's what we call it. But yes, I've been told that there's a VIP meet and greet this evening.
Right.
Which sounds fantastic. Anytime someone mistakenly... Jewel Shepherd's going to take off her clothes.
I'm going to go over on that table for a
minute. All right, I'll see you later, Frank.
That's the end of my interview. No, anytime someone mistakenly calls me a VIP, I'm all for it.
Nice.
Love it.
Nice. Now, one of the other things, too, is that there's going to be a screening of the film over the course of the weekend, Q&A. Are you guys excited about this?
Oh, yeah. No, it's always cool to... meet all the fans and see everyone who still loves this crazy-ass movie. I mean, you know, and at these screenings, it's usually a pretty good turnout, and people, you know, have very specific questions about how we did certain things, and people like to know, you know, ask Linnea what it was like to dance naked on a tomb. And,
but that's a regular Friday night for her, though, isn't it?
Sure, that's a regular Tuesday night.
Oh, okay.
Friday night, I don't even want to tell you what happened on Friday.
Now, Brian, one of the great things, too, is I told you on the air, I'm a huge fan of the movie Bitch Slap.
Oh, yes.
In which you produced.
Yes, I did.
And I'm going to hit you up all weekend. You're going to be completely tired of me by the end of the weekend because I'm still going to try to find a way to weasel my way into a small bit role in the sequel eventually.
Okay. All right. No, that's fine. We'll jot it down. We'll add you to the list of people who are begging to do a cameo. You know who actually has asked me to be in Bitch Slap 2?
Who?
Is the wonderfully talented actor Gary Cole.
Get out!
I adore Gary. We've worked on a couple of films together, and when he caught wind that I had done Bitch Slap, he goes, are you guys going to do a sequel? And I said, we're talking about it. And he goes, you have to put me in that movie. Nice. And I was like, oh my God, that would be awesome. I said, well, Gary, you know, these are low-budget films. We don't have much of money. He goes, I don't care. I'll do it for free. You don't even have to pay me. I want to be in that movie. So he's got some clout. I think that Gary's a shoo-in.
You know, I figured I had an in by saying I would work for free, but if Gary Cole's doing it, I guess I'm out now.
I know, I know.
People
I
do like bitch slapping you, though, so maybe.
Well, yeah, maybe, maybe,
then
maybe.
You may have a leg up there.
Speaking of bitch slapping, I had talked to Beverly Randolph a couple weeks ago on the show. We brought up the idea of a Return of the Living Dead drinking game during the screening.
Oh, fantastic. I love it.
So I just wanted to make sure that if we're doing this, because there are a lot of rules for this, and there's a lot of drinking, there might be a lot of stomach pumping by the end of it.
Well, that's not my favorite part. So you take a drink every time what?
Every time a zombie opens their mouth to say anything.
I can out-drink Brian.
Beverly's saying she can out-drink Brian.
I heard
Beverly's a lightweight, and what we did was we actually got one of those Monopoly pieces, the little thimble, and we're going to give that to her as her shot glass.
I don't know. Yeah, that maybe the little leather shoe. I don't think it's so much that she can outdrink me. I think what she means is that she gets drunk much more quickly than I do. So I think in her mind, once she's schnockered, she thinks she's had a lot to drink.
There you go.
And the sad truth is that that's about half a glass of wine. And I'm drinking like Maker's Mark on the rocks, you know.
You and I are going to talk later when the screening hits.
Okay,
right?
So I'm all for drinking games. Any excuse.
Brian, we are going to let you go, but I want to thank you for hanging with us for the weekend. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you.
And enjoy Jersey, if possible.
Yeah, looking forward to it. So far, so good.
All right, have
here
a great
inside
night.
Inside the Sheraton Meadowlands, Jersey's gorgeous.
All right. Have a great night on that note. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so we are here at Saturday Nightmares in East Rutherford, New Jersey, and we've got a very cool guest with us. Who do we have in front of us at the moment?
John Philbin, very cool guest.
Now, John, you're also here as part of the Return of the Living Dead cast reunion here.
I played Chuck in Return of the Living Dead, the original.
Now, one of the other cool things is on the network, we've been helping to promote a current film we have out called The Perfect House.
Oh, yeah, that's really scary and disturbing.
It's a great film. I had the privilege of going out to Colorado to Starfest to host the screening and the Q&A, the premiere in Colorado.
God, how'd it go?
It was fantastic. And there were people that were so disturbed by it that they wound up having to leave at particular points of the film.
Philippe, the girl that plays my wife in the movie, who's great, she got really disturbed because she has kids, and they torture and kill some kids. It's really graphic and really believable, and it's actually kind of made me sick to my stomach a little bit. Well, I've seen a lot of horror movies.
Well, I actually had brought it up. Knowing Felicity and her family and just what she went through in that film, you can actually see the real mom instinct coming out in all of those scenes. But I got to ask you, being a dad who's a little not the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, I didn't know I wasn't the nicest guy. I deserved everything I got, man. I was a dick, and they killed me. But actually, you know what? I don't die in the movie.
As far as we know.
You know, well, that's the thing.
Spoilers! Hey, hey!
Oh, wow.
We'll edit for content, John.
I need to pee.
No, but I gotta ask. So, playing a husband and a father opposite Felissa, where did you find some of the draw for your character? How did you find the character?
I did not find my character, actually. I didn't find it. I just played myself, and I had a great time. I didn't know it was a serious movie.
Wait, so you are a dick in real life?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know the guy, the character, was a dick. They just edited it that way. I was having fun. I played it really funny and light and comedic. I didn't know I was supposed to be a dick. And they just found the cuts where I was really tired. And I just played, but I was just not nice, not friendly. I was really a dick off camera.
Oh, so it was
totally off camera.
So it's behind the scenes stuff on the video we're going to see later.
Yeah, okay. That's the stuff that's fucking gnarly. That's where the real torture happens.
Will you be teaching any courses on dickery?
Yes, I am a dick instructor.
Nice.
I am a dick teacher.
Good, because I might need some help training my dick.
No, you don't. No. You really don't.
God, I hope I set you guys up. That's so good. There's kids here right behind you just looking at you.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God. Oh.
I want to train
clean it up. Clean it up, John. Clean it up, all right?
Clean up his dick. Clean up the dick. Oh. You guys are brutal.
John Philbin, are you using profanity in
your
interview?
No, they did it. They
my interview, my interview was like something from the Disney Channel.
That's right.
And after the magic of editing, every bad word is coming out of John's mouth at the end of it. So
I won't actually keep hear my name and then
it'll be like the editing in The Perfect House.
Yes. Oh my God.
So are you looking forward to the screening of The Living Dead?
Yeah, tonight the Q&A and the screening. Yeah, I love. Yes, take my pens, Brian Peck. Take my pens that I paid for and brought from California.
Why do I have a feeling that's a regular occurrence?
Oh, every show. He's taking our pens.
Pen theft.
I bring pens for Brian. The Q&A. I love the fans of Return of the Living Dead. I mean, I love the fans. I love the cast. I love coming to these conventions. I love it when people come see the movie. I even like the movie. So I like it all. I'm really happy about it. And then we have a party we have to go after that, like a VIP thing. That's always exciting.
Oh,
like
I'm going to be there for that. Yeah, we're all getting trashed tonight.
Yeah. If the alcohol's free, then it's okay.
Oh, then I'm totally there.
Yeah, right. At very least we're peace.
But if it is, that changes everything.
well, John, listen, we are going to let you go because it is starting to pick up over here, and I don't want to keep you from all your fans.
I need to make $5 right now.
Okay. On that note, we're going to let it go at that. John, listen, thank you very much. It was a pleasure meeting you, and enjoy the weekend.
Pleasure's mine. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And who are we here with?
We're here with Jewel Shepherd, one of the stars of Return of the Living Dead, Hollywood Hot Tubs 2, Hollywood Hot Tubs 1, Party Camp, Scenes of the Gold Mine, Knots Landing. Okay.
Now, why did Hollywood Hot Tubs 2 come before Hollywood Hot Tubs 1?
No, you're wrong. Hollywood Hot Tubs
1. No, you listed them that way.
I listed that way because,
it's like Godfather 2, it's the better one?
Wow.
Yeah, it's deep.
You know,
I'm going deep right away.
I like it deep. I like it deep, long, big, fat.
Are you taking pictures? take video, pictures, everything.
No, I think I listed Hollywood Hot Tubs 2 because everybody else here has a sequel of some sort and I don't. And I was just thinking, you know, Mina Hot Tubs Naked, awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I have an insider question. Yesterday
an
during
insider
the,
question?
That's
How
right.
How deep do you want that inside to go?
I love all this innuendo. It's great. In whose end? No. Yesterday during the Q&A, you were, I think, proposed to at least twice by an actor in the front row, an aspiring actor in the front row. Did anything happen with that guy?
Yeah, he came to room 1580 later, and he just never left it. It was awesome.
Oh, that's nice. Is he there up right now?
Yeah, he's still recovering. You know, it happens when you're just 25, and I'm so mature.
Did I tell you that we were actually recording?
Oh, recording? Oh, yeah. Is that big fuzzy thing in front of me? Oh, God. I really love it when you're recording.
Speaking of feminism, we actually have two authors of a feminist horror blog. Ladies, do you have any questions?
Are you into horror?
Well, the bedroom horror, yes. Tie me up, strap me up, slap me against the window, against the bedpost. Yeah, I love that kind of horror. Here, I have a few t-shirts to sell you.
What is it like to be a cult icon in horror, even though you're not really into it?
Well, the icon status allows me to have 25-year-olds at my beck and call, and they are very happy.
Good lozenge to you. Mm-hmm. Twice. Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes. Yes.
It was very exciting.
Amazing. Yes, and it was very exciting.
Yeah, was he hot?
Oh, that's an important which one?
So did you say yes both times?
Of course. Oh, are you kidding? If a 25-year-old's going to give himself to me happily and show me everything he wants to show me and please me endlessly, what do you think I'm going to say?
Now,
also
during the Q&A, we found out something interesting about you and a cast member.
John Philbin, a.k.a. Chuck. You mean the guy that I said to fuck off and die, but he really didn't fuck off and die? He actually laid me on top of a tombstone, naked in back of Return of the Living Dead? That's what he really didn't tell you. He tried to tell you that how after the movie, but in real reality, we ran off in back of the graveyard, the director wasn't looking, nobody was looking, and John said, "You're hot." And I said, "Yeah, cool, lay me."
Now, without going into any details, oh, wait, I'm a little too slow on the draw there. Very interesting.
I don't like slow. Oh, I guess unless it's against the window, my back, my ass, I'm pressed up against you. Then I like it slow.
Are you taking notes?
I'm committing it to memory, yes. I'm forming a memory. A little bit, yeah. All right, where can we find out more about your work? Your legitimate work.
You can find me on Facebook, Jill Shepherd. Jill Shepherd pretty much anywhere. I am actually all the Jill Shepherds of the world.
Nice.
Very sad.
Useful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, if you guys ever put out an extended, super extended Blu-ray version of the movie, I think the commentary track with just you guys spreading gossip is going to be hilarious and amazing.
Funny enough, we have something super secret, but I can't talk about it because it's super secret. Yeah, well,
we were already told the super secret thing, so you might as well just tell us now.
I can't. I have
trust
a contract.
Us. I can't. I'm not going to say it, but we know what it is.
I have a contract that I have signed, and I cannot go past the super secret stuff. Let's just say that Chuck and I did it on the freaking tombstone.
Mm-hmm. So that is it, part of the secret. On the set of Tombstone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
That's good.
That's very impressive.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And who are we here with?
Alan Troutman, Tarman from Return of the Living Dead.
Yay. You know, you're nowhere near as creepy in real life.
That's, well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I wish more people would say that.
Now, you've been involved in a lot of other projects. Can you give us a quick list of them?
Oh, my gosh. Let's see. For most of my career, I've been a puppeteer and an actor. So I've worked with Jim Henson Company since, like, 1991, when I worked on Dinosaurs TV series.
Love it.
I've worked with the Muppets. We were just in New York last year with Stuffed and Unstrung off-Broadway, our puppet improv show that is going on tour soon. I continue doing TV, films, commercials as they arise, internet shows.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yesterday we got a chance to talk to Willie, and he mentioned that when he's given props for the Tarman costume, he always credits you for being at least 50% of the work. How does that feel?
Oh, it feels great. I mean, it's really, Bill Stout's really sweet about that, but he was right in saying that, you know, casting is half the job. Once you get somebody in there who can actually act, it's not just, you know, being a scary man. You can't just get up there and be scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there has to be some acting going on, some stuff going on behind the mask. And that was always the way I approached all my work, regardless of what I was wearing or how ridiculous I looked. And so for this, I knew it was all about making the costume work, you know, and making his thought processes apparent. That's the important thing about Tarm. Because the more he can think, the more scary it is, you know, the more formidable he becomes.
Right.
Actually, for a movie that's essentially a comedy, you were terrifying.
Oh, well, thanks.
Terrifying. What was it like to be so sloppy and gooey and gross?
It was pretty gross.
I thought you were asking me for a minute. I mean, that's a little rude.
I
try to shower every once in a while.
Well, you know, I would climb in the suit every morning, and then right before we shoot, they would goop me up with all of this gloppy stuff, and then right before the cameras rolled, they would spray me down with water, and then the suit itself would start absorbing all of this. It was like foam rubber. You know?
Yeah.
So by the end of the day, the suit would get heavier and heavier and heavier, and colder and wetter, and it was just sort of this awful clammy thing by the end of the day that I was very happy to get out of.
Would they leave you crammed in that that barrel for a long time?
Well, I wasn't in the barrel, thank God, but I was in that suit for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, if I knew then what I know now about doing suit work,
mm-hmm.
I would have told them, look, I'm not putting the head on until after we block the scene. Because what they did was they put the head on, and they stuck me in a corner hours before they were ready to get to my scene. They were still shooting the previous scene. And they were, like, getting me ready like a prop. You know, and if I had known now the proper way to treat suit performers, I would have said, no, I can't do a proper rehearsal and talk to the director or anything if I got this friggin' head on. So I can't see anything, you know?
I guess it might help if you're a method actor, though. You're miserable, you want to eat brains, you just sort of kill somebody.
That's true, yeah. I was ready to... I certainly was hungry, I'll tell you that much.
Speaking of brains, now I'm not quite the horror aficionado where I'm certain of this, but I believe this is the first film that actually had a zombie calling for brains.
I believe so, yeah. In previous movies, it was zombies wanted flesh, they wanted to eat humans, they wanted to just bite people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this was the first one to get very specific about the brains, about zombies just wanting brains for some reason.
Was that your voice?
No, it wasn't my voice. I couldn't actually say the line because to open the tar man mouth, which was hinged off of my jaw, I really had to push my jaw open really far, like that, and I couldn't actually say words when I was doing that, so I would just go, like that, on the set.
Well, it worked.
And then they, thanks. And because I knew instinctively as a puppeteer that you just had to make the mouth work, and then they would add the proper sounds in later. I just had to make it look like he was talking. If I did that, then I knew they could take care of the sound and post.
Very nice. Very cool. Well, where can we find out more about your work?
Well, you can go to allantrautman.com, A-L-L-A-N-T-R-A-U-T-M-A. I'm on IMDb. You can look me up. You just, Google me if you want. But everything you should need to know is on allantrautman.com.
Excellent. Thank you very much for giving us some time.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for coming by.
Next up, we interview Debbie Rashan, whose line of credits are dwarfed only by the line of admirers waiting at her table.
And who are we here with?
I am Debbie Rashan. I've made almost 200 independent horror movies. I had a show on Sirius XM called Fangoria Radio for 4 years. I write for many, many magazines, including Fangoria, Phantom of the Movies, Videoscope, and dozens of others that are no longer in print.
Those were the best ones.
And those were the best, some of the best ones.
Now, we've been trying to get an interview with you for quite a while, including this day, and we can't, we have to, like, make it in between breaks of fans coming to get their stuff autographed. What do you think of Saturday Nightmares?
I am loving it. Today is just absolutely crazy, and I'm especially excited because two movies that I'm very, very proud of, Wonton Baby and Slime City Massacre, new movies for me, are both screening, so it's been a little crazy, you know, doing the Q&As and meeting everybody. Last night was a little slow, tomorrow might be a little slow, but everybody's come today, so it's been quite a zoo in the most positive way, so it's great.
Can you tell us a little bit about this film?
Wonton Baby? Oh my goodness, it's absolutely great because it incorporates like the crazy horror 80s vibe, like the almost silly, if you will, aspects of the 80s horror movies with comedy, but then it also has like a lot of statements in it as well, like female struggle with power versus men. And, you know, the baby, which is in my daughter's side, it's like a fetus in fetu.
Oh, neat.
And so it finally gets taken out, and it's alive still, miraculously, after 20-something years. But now it likes to eat flesh, strangely.
That'll happen.
And have sex with women with its umbilical cord.
That happens a lot, too.
Another odd thing. But he was an offspring of my one-night stand with an Elvis impersonator. So he's sort of born with a, you know, pompadour and a lot of personality. So, you know, I won't ruin the end, but the end is like very, you know, female empowerment and, you know, not
nice.
So much like, you know, kicking ass and doing karate, but in other ways that you will see. Amazing, like very intelligent script and yet a lot of silly fun all at the same time.
It's basically a retelling of Taming of the Shrew.
Exactly.
Right. All right.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
All right.
So, as a woman in the genre, and you've been in it for a long time in all different aspects, movies, radio, I read your articles in Fangoria.
Thank you. Very good. Appreciate it.
How do you feel about female roles in horror? Do you have trouble getting roles that you feel are appropriate for women? I know that many roles have ended up, not your roles, but many roles tend to be girlfriend slash virgin.
I've done that too, and I tell you, two things. One is with age, the roles get better. Because they no longer can cast you as like the cowering, whining victim. And two, since I started, which was like the late 80s, 88, 89, the roles have been written completely differently now. now it's like, you know, seeing it's very cool to be the final girl, and everything's changed over the years, and so many more women enjoy horror. Now we have female icons that are kicking ass, and a lot of men enjoying watching women kick ass. So the roles have completely changed from, like, exploitation, which is what you had to take if you wanted to work, and especially early 90s and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, really, Alien was an anomaly.
Yes.
You know, that was just
huge groundbreaking for 1979.
Absolutely, and almost never happened again, very rarely. Now that's the common, and now it's very interesting, because I see a lot of actresses coming up, and they only want the kick-ass roles, understandably, because now we're in a new generation of strong women. But it's interesting to me, because I just sort of suffer through, if you will, all of, like, the crappy exploitation stuff that I did when I started. No regrets, though. You know, I had a lot of fun and everything. But now you see women coming out, and they don't have to go through that process anymore. They're 20, and they're getting, like, great kick-ass roles. So good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find that that's more common in independent films?
Totally more common. However, I gotta say, like, with a lot of the remakes, they're sort of remaking the roles of the women that were in the classics as well. Even though, like, in the original Chainsaw, it was a woman who survived to the end, and it was she was strong for surviving it. She still went crazy and went nuts. Now you see a lot of the final girls. You know, it's more of an empowerment thing. They have somehow killed the, you know, the Jason character, whereas the guys couldn't. And so you see a lot more of that. And I think the rewriting of the classics is leaning more towards the rewriting of the females in those roles, knowing that it really wouldn't be as tolerable. You know, like a Last House on the Left was really, really good and powerful emotionally, but a lot of people repelled from it because it wasn't quite as, you know, the women completely came on top at the end, even though the couple, you know, survived and stuff. So the whole playing ground has changed, I mean, to the advantage of women, but more so in the indie field, because we could do what we want, and then we worry about selling it, and then we sell it or we don't. If you're in the higher budgeted stuff, it has to get okayed by so many people. Now, you know, women have to be attractive, and they have to be this, that, and the other thing, and you don't have a wide variety of women. But in the indie field, you make your movie, you do your art, hopefully it is, and then you worry about getting sold, as opposed to something being sold before it's even written, which is Hollywood. So, yeah.
Great insight. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Where can we find out more about your current projects?
Well, there's always debbyrichon.com, or, you know, check me out on Facebook or Twitter, all the usual things. And, you know, I write for Fangoria, and you can sort of follow my exploits there. So just
I enjoyed your story about the possession of your co-star.
Oh, the cunty demon.
That was
which,
my story, madam.
Yes, and
one.
You know, I gotta say that, you know, the sad truth is the cunty demon exists everywhere.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not, you know, only in the South or the North or any particular place. Sadly, you will find in every business a woman that is, and it's a very sad thing, possessed by the cunty demon that needs to be exorcised.
Believe me. So, thank you.
Listen now as Frank is torn apart by Hellraiser's own pinhead, Doug Bradley.
And who are we here with?
I have no idea. Let me check. Oh, you seem to be here with Doug Bradley. And people may know me a little better as Pinhead from the Hellraiser movies.
Of course. You are a personal role model of mine. I mean, Pinhead is. I have...
I'd be very careful with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I'm
taking
sorry
Pinhead
about
as a role model?
Well, it's just I'm really, really into horror and bondage and discipline. So, I mean, it's the perfect character for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should we be hearing this?
Oh, I'm sorry, we're recording?
I think
we're recording.
We'll end this interview right here then.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it's like being a horror icon?
Just let me finish tying these knots here, and there we are.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, that's right. Good.
It's comfortable.
What's it like being a horror icon?
Yes.
I have no idea. I don't think of myself as a horror icon. I'm just, you know, I'm me. I do the work. It's cool, you know. It's great. For an actor, your greatest enemy is anonymity. To have this constant affirmation of work that I did nearly 25 years ago is just, you know, endlessly humbling.
To be serious for a moment, there's been
yes,
talk recently.
Enough of this frippery.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a talk recently about the influx of, I guess it's slasher
Mexicans?
Porn.
No.
Mexicans and slasher porn, the torture porn.
Torture porn.
There we go.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Hellraiser is. It's psychologically, it's gruesome to a degree, but it's not graphic. What do you think about that?
Well, I absolutely agree with that. I don't think Hellraiser was a particularly graphic movie. Hellbound, the second movie, had particularly one scene, the rebirth of Julia from the mattress, which was extremely graphic and a lot of blood. For me, the issue is not about graphic. It's about a little word beginning with I called imagination. And Hellraiser is awash with imagination. Hostel is not. Hostel is an imagination-free zone. And I've never really been a big fan of the slasher genre. For me, it's always been fantasy and imagination that has drawn me and attracted me to horror films. Weird imagination, violent imagination, bloody imagination. Fine, I have no problem with that, no problem with gore. I'm not trying to run away from that. But, you know, you go to Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, a lot of the movies in the 80s that were doing something different from what was, I mean, you use the term slasher porn, was very much prevalent, I guess, in the 80s. Torture porn, you know, I'll watch it and I kind of walk away from it anyway. I just watched French film called Martyrs.
Yes.
Martyr.
Yeah. What did you think?
And I believe the director was attached to the Hellraiser remake briefly. I thought,
many people were briefly.
I try not to be a prude, and I am not in favor of censorship, but I thought it was an odious film. A really, really odious film. The extremity of the violence towards females seems to be a French issue. Inside was another movie I kind of felt the same way about. And then at the end, they used the flayed woman idea, same as we do in Hellraiser, and the special effects were rather beautiful, but they tagged on this kind of metaphysical idea about trying to keep someone alive and take them beyond death so they could report on what was happening on the other side of death. And that's a great idea to explore, but that was stuck on the last 2 minutes of the movie. The whole of the rest of the movie was just about violence, 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 violence. And I it's purely a personal thing. I'm not asking people not to make those movies. I just don't get it at all. Now, Saw, which also gets dragged into the torture porn, particularly the first movie, I had a great time. I thought Jigsaw was a really cool invention. And there was a lot of cleverness and imagination, I thought, going on in the plot and the ideas with Saw. It got a little repetitive, you know, as we tend to with our sequels. And I'm as guilty as the next man, God knows. But, you know, it's there as a kind of subgenre. The voice of God. Let's hear it for Sid Haig, 50 years in show business.
Woo!
Table.
That was sounds interesting.
Yes.
Do you have any questions?
Yes. You have very serious thoughts about the horror genre. So you are a fan as well as an actor in the genre?
I was a fan of horror movies as a teenager before I knew I wanted to be an actor. When I became an actor, I didn't have any particular ambition to work in the genre. That kind of came along, I guess, by accident through my friendship with Clive. I'm still a fan of the genre, you know. I'm still checking out the new movies. And
can you give us a couple new ones you think are interesting?
The most recent movie I saw in theaters was Insidious.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did.
Me too. Yay.
It actually slightly scared me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not... and I watch a lot on Love Film. Back home is kind of English equivalent of Netflix. Saw a really cool Korean vampire movie last year.
Called,
yes. Really, really like that. I just caught up with... It's my girlfriend's recommendation. It's a German film about a serial killer called Angst.
What year was Angst?
Earlier, is it? 80s movie, we think. I would recommend that. Track it down. It's an extraordinary film. So I'm kind of watching new stuff, catching up with old stuff.
That's great. It's nice. Yeah. We were at Monster Mania a couple months back, and we saw your panel.
Right.
One, you were hilarious.
Hilarious.
It's really nice.
Kane and I always have fun together.
God. It was great.
It was funny. But it's really nice to be able to have somebody who is also a fan and who still is following the genre. A lot of people that we've talked to, we find kind of work there, but they don't care.
Well, you know, it's... You know, I might get to make a Western one day, but it doesn't mean to say I will, you know, declare myself to have always been a fan of Western movies, although, in fact, I always have been. But, you know, I think it's reasonable that someone who's a jobbing actor... will run across our genre, and you know, so if someone then puts a microphone in their face and asks them about horror movies in general, they may very well not have an opinion. That's, I think that's fair enough.
Well, it's very nice and refreshing to talk to somebody who has an opinion.
Well, I have, yeah.
Did we agree that we were going to ask him about the porn name, or we were just going to be professional and not bring that up?
Well, we
are. Porn name?
We already heard about it at the panel when you and Mr. Hodder were discussing your porn name.
Okay, yes, yes.
I remember.
It
stuck with us.
Nice.
Well, your porn name, your first name, is the name of your first family pet.
Mm-hmm.
And the second name is the name of the street you were living on at the time. So my porn name is Kim Towers.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds lovely.
And yours, sir?
Mine would be Mimi 74th Street.
Oh, I love it.
Very accurate.
Nice. That's a good one. Nice.
I want your porn name.
Sheba Greenwood.
Sheba Greenwood.
That is amazing.
That's the best one. I can't possibly
beat
that. Saki... Coles.
Did you say sucky?
Sucky. But it's
sucky.
Close enough.
Yes, sucky.
Close enough. Like the drink.
Cold.
Sucky. Cold.
Cold.
Yeah. It's pretty good, right?
Pretty good.
That's good. I know. Yours is the best. Sheba?
Yeah, that's
pretty
good.
That's like a 70s
word. Mimi is.
Yeah, that's pretty
hot.
Yeah,
74th Street is not.
It's my name and where I work.
Our porn names are excellent.
Maybe Mimi Street.
Yeah.
74th could be like in Brooklyn.
That's your middle name.
Your middle name,
I like that.
Mimi
really
74th
like
Street.
You learn something.
Yes.
Yeah, you learn something new every day. So, yeah, where can we find out more about your projects?
I have a website, which is dogbradley.com.
Okay, thank you very much.
And there is a link from there. I have a Facebook fan page.
Oh, excellent.
It wasn't just the stars that got molested by our crew. Vendors and convention goers themselves felt the grim touch of our subpar interview skills.
All right, and who are we here with?
Gordon from Special Edition Vinyl.
Oh, very nice. And what are you doing here?
Getting autographs, just doing things, meeting stars, stuff like that.
Cool. Whose table did you just stop by?
Michael Bolton.
Oh, fantastic. Big fan of his, friend of the network. What do you think so far of the Saturday Nightmares?
I think they're great shows. I went to the one last year they had with George Romero. I mean, they have great stars, great actors here, really friendly atmosphere. I've been there over shows. This is one of my favorites.
Excellent. Yeah, it's one of our favorites, too. Thanks for stopping by, Lily. Let's talk to you for a bit.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. Who are we here with?
This is Damon Cassaro over at the Headstone City table. We're selling horror T-shirts for everyone, having a great time.
These are awesome designs. You came up with them.
I did myself. You know, I'm a big horror fan. I was tired of the typical, you know, throw a movie poster onto a T-shirt. You can get them anywhere. They're like a dime a dozen. You know, they're cool, but, you know, they have their place. So I figured, you know, I'm a graphic designer, so why not come up with my own stuff and give it a whirl? And it seems to be going really well. I get a lot of positive feedback from it.
Awesome. Which one of your designs is your favorite? I'm making you pick from your children here.
Yeah, it's tough. I do like the floating brain a lot. That's a cool one, the green
classic.
The attack of the giant cicada is another one.
Oh, nice.
And the 3D skull I like as well.
Very cool. Do you do commission work?
Yeah, occasionally I will accept that. Yeah, just go to the website and email me.
Now, can you give us that URL one more time?
It's www.headstonecity.com.
Very nice.
And there's a blog on there, and I post updates about new T-shirts and different conventions I go to. And there's also a link to a horror wallpaper site that I designed, like, you know, wallpapers for your desktop.
Now, hopefully our listeners at home will be looking at pictures of this while we're talking, but some of these designs are really great. I love businessman with giant red eyeball. That's great. I'm sure our co-host would love the screaming monkey. What is this?
Yeah, it's just like a fire gorilla.
Nice. Very cool. And who are we here with?
Daniela Fulham, Little Punk People.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Little Punk People?
Sure. It started out making T-shirts, actually by hand, for my son, who was a newborn, and I didn't like anything that was out there. I mean, I was already painting for years or whatever, but I wanted to start doing T-shirts or whatever with little characters of him and his little friends, and then it just expanded from there to doing more paintings and, you know, little gifts and the little pillow goon things.
Very cool. Very cool. Do you have a favorite piece of work here?
Here, she actually sold already.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes,
what was it?
My next, I did a black swan.
Nice.
With like the red eyes and whatever. She was actually my favorite, but I would have to say the next favorite is Victor and Victoria.
Those are adorable.
Thank you.
Very cool. Adorable and creepy.
Yes.
A creepable.
Yes. And they're both wearing polka dots. They're matching. They have the yellow teeth, yellow eyes.
Aw.
Yes, they're kind of flirting with each other in a zombie-ish, creepy sort of way. So,
where can we find out more about your work?
www.littlepunkpeople.net. And I'm also on Etsy as well. Little Punk
cool.
People, all one word. We're on Facebook as well, Little Punk People.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Indeed, many legends were in attendance at Saturday Nightmares, and few with as great a cult following as the devious Sid Haig and the enchanting Barbara Steele.
And who are we here with?
Sid Haig.
Is this your first time at Saturday Nightmares?
Yes, it is.
What do you think about it so far?
So far, so good. I think the show will, you know, build itself into something. I understand that there are more people here this year than there were last. So, you know, hopefully for the promoters who are really cool, everything works out.
Very cool. Now, this isn't your first horror con.
This is definitely not my first horror con.
What do you think it is about the genre that makes the fans so rabid, other than actual rabies?
I still haven't figured it out, okay? It's just, horror is I think, almost necessary for good health. Because it gets the adrenal glands going, you know, and then that kind of takes away that idea of if you don't lose it, use it, you lose it.
Right.
All right? So know, that's about it. I can't figure it out, but the fans are the best there is in any form of entertainment, okay? I mean, yeah, you have a rock concert, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 people show up, but they don't stand in line for days and days and days to try to get autographs, okay? Mm-hmm. So, this is very cool.
Do you have any projects you're working on right now?
Nothing right now, okay, but I've got probably within the next year, 5 films that are going to be released.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
Take it easy. The rest of us got to work, too.
Yeah, well, hey, you know what? You snooze, you lose. That's
exactly.
It.
Very cool. Where can we find out more of the things you are working on?
Well, you could go to my website, which is sidhaig.com. Everything that you wanted to know about me and more. You know, you might even get bored. I don't know. But I also have my web store there.
Nice.
With over 100 items.
Very cool.
Very, very inexpensive Christmas shopping. Plug, plug.
Nice. Every Christmas should be a nightmare before Christmas. Do you have any questions? This is actually, how do you describe yourselves? A feminist?
We're a feminist horror blog.
Yeah.
Because women don't really get included in the horror conversation so much.
Have you ever connected with Heidi Martinuzzi?
No.
You should, because she ran Pretty Scary for years.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And now she's got a new...
It's Fangirl-tastic, I think.
I think so, yeah.
I know Fangirl-tastic. Yeah. Do you mind me asking something?
Sure, go ahead.
You've been a cult icon since you were a child, basically, haven't you?
Sorry.
Well, okay. Thanks for catching me up on myself.
I'm so sorry, dude.
We're all in awe.
I just think that's really cool. What has it been like to live in the horror world basically most of your life?
It's been great. It's been a great ride, you know. It's like I said before, the fans are fantastic. They're the most loyal people around, okay? Yes, there's trolls and you know, people that just have to stir up shit just so that they can do it, okay? But by and large, the horror fans are the best. And, you know, it's the internet, okay, is a great source of information and everything. At the same time, you know, people get to get on there and bitch about something that they have absolutely no idea of, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Some woman bitched me out because at some point I said that, you know, zombie eats brains or whatever. Zombies do not eat brains, okay? So I said, okay, will you please send me a list of things that zombies don't eat so I never make that mistake again, you stupid bitch? Okay?
Saucy.
Yeah.
Nicely
done. So, you know, you have that. And then there's also always the rumor mill. The internet imitates Hollywood perfectly. Because in Hollywood, if you don't hear a rumor by noon, start one. And that's the same thing that happens on the internet. What? No, nobody's starting any shit. Let me see. Rob Zombie is going to get breast implants. Okay,
oh.
Boom.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. No.
We'll have to save it for noon tomorrow.
That's right.
Yeah, save noon tomorrow. Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you very much, man.
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank
a lot.
You. All right.
Appreciate it.
Great. Bye.
Who are we here with?
I'm Barbara Steele.
Can you tell us a little bit about the role of women as it's evolved in horror movies?
Well, I am not an expert on horror.
Mm-hmm.
But they are probably much more informed than I am, you know. Because actually the movies I made, they're very formal. They're almost from another century in their formality as opposed to the gore and, as you know, all the bodily fluids of today's movies.
Very true.
If you don't mind talking about your work with Mario Bava and how it was to work with him. I found that Black Sunday is, you're wonderful in it. It's a beautiful
thank you. Well, Mario Bava, Black Sunday, you know, as you know, probably know, he was a cameraman, so this was his first feature, and he, Black Sunday, and he really... He was like Orson Welles in as much as he played out all of his visual fantasies with this film. And that's why it's so eternal and visually compelling. It was a very interesting movie to make because we shot the whole thing in black and white on a black and white set in black and white costumes, and there wasn't an ounce of color other than a small amount of blood in the whole movie.
That's amazing too.
Yeah. So even the crew weren't allowed to wear, like, you know, which is very un-Italian. So the whole thing was insanely somber. It's as if you were in some kind of mask.
It does seem very serious, but it seemed to have worked. The film is extremely effective. It's beautiful visually. You're beautiful in it.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
I think you're one of the most beautiful women in the world, if you don't mind me saying.
Oh, my God. Well, you are a mad person. Thank you anyway.
I am.
They're saying what I stumbled over awkwardly for the first 5 minutes of this interview. Yes.
Thank you very much. Are you all from New Jersey?
When there is no more room in hell or the hotel lobby, the dead will walk the earth. Join us as we introduce the late and lovely Marielle and Jessica, chief necromancers at the NJ Zombie Walk.
And who are we here with?
Hi, I am Jess.
Now Marielle.
And we're here for the New Jersey Zombie Walk.
New Jersey Zombie Walk. Can you tell us a little bit about a zombie walk as if we were living under a stone for the last 10 years?
If you were living under a stone and you have no idea, a zombie walk is when people dress up like zombies and invade and walk through the town, shamble, create havoc, have a good time.
Creep, scare the locals. Mm-hmm. It's a frightfully good time.
And it's not just for adults. I've seen kids in zombie walks, too. In fact, I think they enjoy it more than the adults.
I think so, too. We've had people in their 80s. We've had toddlers. We've had pets.
My favorite are the pets.
That is
absolutely
great.
One day, my cat will be at the zombie walk.
Very nice. Where are you going to be zombie walking at this con?
We will be in the courtyard tomorrow.
They've already started.
At 7 p.m., and we're going to be led by Ken Forey around the perimeter of the Sheridan.
Very nice. And filling.
Upcoming events.
Oh, yes.
Other zombie walks.
So you're going to be doing other zombie walks.
Absolutely. Our next event is going to be at the at Dorney Park. Zombies are going to invade Dorney Park, and this is going to be on August 18th. We are trying to go for a few world records there. We have already won a world record. We've done, at the Asbury Park Zombie Walk, we achieved the largest gathering of zombies with over 4,000. We took the, from Seattle, Washington? We took their record.
Oh, nice.
No, not in Seattle. Sorry.
From England, actually.
From England.
Which is very impressive.
The second Revolutionary War.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
mm-hmm.
even better.
Yes.
Seattle is going for the record, I hear.
Oh, they're not going to make it. You know, I don't like to toot my own horn, but the radio station was involved in the last world record event. Guinness World Record for most number of people dressed as Where's Waldo. That's right.
Wow.
It was only a couple of years ago.
Interesting.
Maybe we can merge together.
I saw Waldo at the Zombie Walk.
Actually, Where's Waldo Zombie Walk?
You
yes.
might be able to find him in this photo.
Ooh, neat.
Exactly.
All right, thank you. And where can we find out more information about the Zombie Walks?
You can go to njzombiewalk.com. I just also want to mention that we're having a three-day festival this October with a return of the Zombie Walk. It's going to be huge this year. And we're also on Facebook. Facebook.com/NJZombieWalk.
Thank you very much. You missed a chance to make fun of me for saying toot my own horn on the radio.
Oh, man.
It's used to it.
This episode was recorded in Nonproductive Studios. It was produced by Frank Hablawi. Additional interviews by Ken Smith. And the Final Girls support group featuring Jenny Dreadful and Stay Frosty. Photography by Connie Freestone. Additional production by Nonproductive. For more terrifying podcasts like this one, go to non-productive.com. That's some fancy editing on our last clip. But the truth rarely escapes the clip keeper of the Nonpro Vault. For I seem to remember a different take of the Barbara Steele interview, where Frank lets his true feelings fly.
And who are we here with?
I'm Barbara Steele.
Yes.
Nice to meet you. What's your name?
My name is Frank.
Hey, Frank.
How are you doing? I gotta admit, I'm a little bit in awe right now. We've been a huge fan. The entire, I told you we would have it. Would you like to just come in?
Are you Italian?
No.
You look Italian.
Thank you.
Okay. I think everybody in New Jersey is Italian.
That may be so.
I'm part Italian. Does that count?
Yeah, that definitely counts. Would you like...
I think if you don't mind talking about your work with Mario Bava and how it was to work with him, I found that Black Sunday is... You're wonderful in it. It's a beautiful
film. Thank you, thank you. Well, Mario Bava, Black Sunday, as you probably know, he was a cameraman, so this was his first feature, and Black Sunday. And he really... He was like Orson Welles in as much as he played out all of his visual fantasies of this film. And that's why it's so eternal and visually compelling. It was a very interesting movie to make because we shot the whole thing in black and white on a black and white set in black and white costumes, and there wasn't an ounce of color other than a small amount of blood in the whole movie.
That's amazing to know. I didn't know.
So even the crew weren't allowed to wear, which is very un-Italian. So the whole thing was insanely somber. It's as if you were in some kind of mask.
It does seem very serious, but it seemed to have worked. The film is extremely effective. It's beautiful visually. You're beautiful in it. It's amazing.
I think you're one of the most beautiful women in the world, if you don't mind me saying.
Oh, my God. Well,
you're
Jeff,
gorgeous.
You are a mad person. Thank you anyway.
I am.
They're saying what I stumbled over awkwardly for the first 5 minutes of this interview.
Thank you very much. Are you all from New Jersey?
Yes, yes we are. Actually, I work at the radio station. They work at a feminist horror website. So can you tell us a little bit about the role of women as it's evolved in horror movies?
Well, I am not an expert on horror.
Mm-hmm.
But they are probably much more informed than I am, you know. Because actually the movies I made, they're very formal. They're almost from another century in their formality as opposed to... The gore and, as you know, all the bodily fluids of today's movies.
Very true. All right, thank you very much for your time. One last thing before we go and give you back to your fans. Would you give us a plug for the radio station? Say your name and you're listening to Non-Productive is the name of the show.
It's called what?
Non-Productive.
Oh, well... My name is Barbara Steele, and I hope everybody's listening to Non-Productive, especially you. But hey, wait a minute. Let's be productive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you very, very much.
Thank
you as well. Thank you guys for saving me. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for watching that. I'm not editing a single word out of that. I want all my stuttering in there. That's going to make it. Thank you very much. Thanks, guys, for giving us a couple minutes. Did I tell you? Did I tell you? It's going to happen.
This is wonderful.
Yeah.
I feel awkward, but in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. You did amazing. You both did amazing.
Oh, thank you.
You guys, I love her films. Yeah. I love Baba.
So,
that's my thing.
I took about an hour to edit my Night of the Living Dead interviews to cut out all my good. I don't think I'm editing anything.
Don't even cut it.
Because you...
You're pretty.
I'm glad this isn't live.
Thanks.
Yeah. I hope it was live. I'd be like,
no, we're not editing this. We're leaving it as is.
Hi.
All right.